Real businesses like Malibu Apothecary rely on Spectrum to keep them connected.
We're a fragrance company, but we also have a lot of technology that we use. Spectrum is really the backbone of any of the business we do here. Having a reliable, fast internet service that can fit my budget is really great. I traded a 9 to 5 for a 5 to 9. It's a lot of work, but I love it.
Spectrum Business Internet starts at $40 a month when bundled. Learn more at spectrum.com/business. Restrictions apply. Services not available in all areas.
Because he's a friend of the show. And he's on the North Olmsted Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram Hotline. His name is Ben Broussard. Ben, how are you, my friend?
Hello, Ben.
Man, how's it going, guys? Great to be here.
Always exciting to have
Good to have you back with us.
Are you singing at all still? I just had to ask you that first.
Yes, I definitely am. I've got a group of musicians that I play with around the Austin area. So we do festivals and kind of just different big events and things like that.
Still do mostly your songs or cover songs? Or what do you do? How's that playing out?
Really? Yeah, it's been really all my songs. So I did an album, I think a year ago in the fall. So I had some new songs I put out, and so we were doing those. It came out to like 2-3 hours, you know, original music, and then I tell a lot of stories, just you know, because a lot of the songs were written when I was playing. So there's like good things that can kind of attach to it, and then yeah, so it's kind of a singer songwriter Americana kind of vibe.
Kind of vibe. I like that a lot.
How were guys with you about carrying your guitar around? And because now, especially if you're writing songs about playing baseball too, because guys get real weird about stuff like that. Like they don't want anybody knowing what their life's all about. Now all of a sudden you're writing songs and they're like, hope he's not writing about me.
Yeah, a lot of it was metaphoric, you know, so like the guys gave me a hard time because some of them were like about relationship type songs and stuff like that. But that's just like when you're kind of learning how to write, those are hear songs to write about, and then you know, I wrote a lot of joke songs, and that's what I think was good for the clubhouse, is like I'd make up songs about guys, and I kept like a notebook of like when guys were doing things that were like kind of something you could give them a hard time about, I'd like write it down, and then like later on the spot, you know, when they're like, Benny, grab the guitar, sing us a song, and then they're like like sing a song about somebody, and I already kind of had the ammo, you know, in my head because I'd looked it over, and they were always like, man, how do you remember that? You know, that was like 2 months ago. And yeah, I'm like, it's up here, but really, it was just I'd write it down when I saw it, you know, just because you know, you play together every day, you have like this family kind of brother kind of vibe going where you can, you know, get on each other and say things, and so using the guitar was an easy way to camouflage it.
Ben, when you were with the Indians, you were on a team that had some hitting. You know, you had some guys who could swing the bat a little bit. Johnny Peralta was a pretty good hitter. Booney for a while. Grady Sizemore, Travis, obviously Victor Martinez, you. And so hitting wasn't a huge issue for your teams. It's a huge issue for this team now. It's just not very productive offensively. How difficult is that when your entire team seems to not be producing? You know, the Guardians have two guys who are hitting pretty well, Jose, Stephen Kwan. How difficult is it when your team just isn't getting it done offensively and you're trying like crazy to get it done offensively?
Yeah, you know, I think you have lots of practice kind of coming into these times because, you know, baseball's so hard. You have to learn how to reset, come to the field, and just like, what am I getting better today at? And then, you know, just do that over and over. So I think guys are really good at that, especially at the major league level. So I would think what guys would do on a team that's maybe not clicking in the same way that they had in the past is they would just be more creative and try to figure out other ways to score, you know, and other ways to produce. And it could be small little things like maybe, you know, being a little more aggressive on the bases and than normal, or, you know, it could be, taking pride in not striking out, even though maybe we're not getting the big hits, but we're making them throw a lot of pitches. I mean, you just try to find other things to find victories in, and you ride through it. And you know, the guys are talented enough that, you know, it's so weird. I can tell you so many times in my career where I felt like completely lost, and then a ball would just fall in, or just something would happen that really, looking back, it was a bad hit, you know, but it would just take off the pressure. And then all of a sudden, I just felt different and I was able to perform differently. And so there's this intangible thing, I think, that is a beautiful part about baseball. And it's really hard to understand, but you know, how guys can be struggling and then all of a sudden the team can just turn around and get really red hot and, you know, finish strong. And I don't know, that's what I would say about the Guardians watching them, is they're still right in it, you know? So it just takes a matter of a few things clicking, and then all of a sudden you have a good month and you're looking up and you're like, wow, you remember when we were talking about it like this? So, I mean, I've been a part of a lot of teams like that where, you know, maybe the first half we weren't where we wanted to be, and then all of a sudden, you know, ball started falling, people started getting healthy, feeling good, you know, it's heating up, the ball's carrying Barry. You know, there's all kinds of reasons to get excited about the second half. I was always looking forward to the second half. You know, that's kind of how
And Ben, looking back at it from with perspective now, what should a team actually expect out of their first baseman in today's game?
Oh, it's so different. You know, I think every team's different. You know, some guys are like crazy good defensively and they bring a bunch of value that way. And, so I don't know. I when I look down the board, I think there's so many different people that are accepted as, you know, you got low average guys that are big power guys. And then you got guys that maybe don't have as much power, but they're great hitters and they get on base. And, you know, so I think different teams just look at whatever's going on in their, in their team, and they kind of figure out like whether it's a first baseman or a third baseman that's filling a hole for the type of player they're looking for. But yeah, I think you know, like definitely being a good defender is huge, because you know that just makes a that takes a lot of pressure off of your, you know, your infield and your pitching staff, because you know that like, hey, we're going to make the plays we're supposed to make. So I think that's something that I've seen, like guys getting better and better, it seems, defending.
Ben Broussard joining us, former Indians first baseman. Times in your career when you were an everyday player, especially when you were here, times when you were not playing every day. This team has a lot of situations where, you know, they're resting a guy here and there or just flat out platooning guys, Ben. And that's great to play the entire roster. It keeps everybody engaged. But for those days when you're not playing, how difficult is it to keep your bat ready to go if you're not getting every day at bats?
Yeah, it's a challenge. You know, you've got to figure out, like I remember when it started happening, I had to just figure out, you know, ways to get better in that moment, even though I wasn't playing. So I started really power shagging and working on a new position. Like I'm like, okay, I'm going to work on the outfield because I was playing first base a lot. And so I just started really working hard on the outfield. And then I was hitting, you know, extra every day. And I was just throughout kind of the game, I was just constantly like, okay, I got a minute. I'm going to run and hit like 15 off the tee and, you know, do some sit-ups and push-ups and kind of run up and down just to stay hot. And you know, it's weird when you can look at it and try to stay positive and just realize that, like, you know, I can only control what I can control. So whenever I'm in the lineup, you know, I'm going to be ready. That kept me sane. And then, you know, eventually it kind of worked out to where, you know, I was playing again.
It's hard. Is that right? It's been almost 20 years since you played here? That can't be right. 06 was your last year? 05?
Yeah, 06, I got traded. That's right.
Oh, man. Like, I can't believe that. I was just going to – what was it like for you when you played here? Like, what was the I remember, like, the big night when you were doing a concert at House of Blues after the game. And I know I think we talked about that last time. But, I mean, what is it really like for somebody to play baseball in Cleveland?
Yeah, it was such a good experience. Looking back, I mean, it was like when people say, you know, where do you see yourself when you think back? You know, it's Cleveland of all the places. And I think like that family feel and coming in with a bunch of young players that, you know, we were just trying to survive at the big league level and kind of going through all those hard things together. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, growing up and then, you know, eventually getting to the park and getting traded, you know, it was really hard looking back because I'm like, man, the best times for sure were in Cleveland, you know, when we weren't good and then when we were good and then when we were right on the edge. And, you know, there was all these really great moments watching kind of all of us mature into the big league guys that we were.
And the way pitching has changed in recent years. As a hitter, what would you think of it? What if you see a starting pitcher more than twice in a game, it might be a rarity, and then one different power arm after another one coming out of that bullpen. How do you attack that?
Yeah, so I get to work with hitters now, so I do a lot of consultant stuff with guys. So it's been great kind of being along kind of the process and watching the game kind of evolve. And, you know, like what I talk about with all our guys is really them understanding like their strengths and where they do damage and what they do well. And then trying to hunt and, you know, have that mindset and kind of try to dictate the at-bat versus feeling like, you know, you're walking up there thinking of, well, what's he going to do to me? And so, you know, the best hitters that I ever played with were really good at kind of shrinking the zone, and they would hunt, you know, certain parts of the zone, but most of the time it was parts that they did well with. And so if a guy didn't, you know, hit the ball down very well, then he looked up. And so I think, you know, some of that can easily get lost with all the information, and, you know, there's so much to really concentrate on. And so I kind of try to refocus guys and simplify it and say, hey, man, what do you do good? You know, where do you hit the ball really well? Where does that pitcher not want to throw the ball? You know, and then when they figure that out, then they're kind of like, oh, okay, I understand maybe more what the guy's trying to do to me here. And you can talk to the best pitchers, you know, like Cliff Lee is a great example, good friend of mine. You know, we'll be talking to like a young player, a young hitter, and Cliff will be there. And I'll say something like, hey, Cliff, how hard was it to hit your spot? You know, and he was one of the best at it, you know, at the prime of his career. And he'll tell him, he's like, man, I could throw it right down the middle with the best of them. And, you know, you got to be ready for that. And so I try to encourage that style of thinking versus like, oh, no, he's got, you know, this much break and, you know, this much ride or, you know, this much spin. I mean, I think that's all great information, but I just try to, like, you know, use that information to redirect them to, okay, like, you know, the best way to hit those guys are, you know, to try to take those pitches instead of maybe trying to prove to the world that you can hit that pitch. That's his best pitch. Let's let that one go. You know, like, guys, talking to young guys and trying to help them understand that, you know, that's the game of chess, you know, that we're all playing in when you're at that level.
It's interesting to hear you talk about that from a coach's perspective, the way you're putting it, because like Eddie Murray was here for the majority of the time you were here, right? I think as the hitting coach. So what did you learn from him, and what other guys gave you the biggest impact on your ability to play the offensive game?
Yeah, Eddie Murray was great because, you know, he had his way of communicating to everybody. And so I just decided I was going to, like, sit on his hip and wear him out and just ask him tons of questions. Hmm. And I think it was getting to the point where he was tired of me asking about stuff. But he was like, hey, man, you play the best position on the field to figure that out. And I remember being like, what are you talking about? And he's like, man, you need to talk to the best player on the other team. Ask him that question. And he's like, I guarantee you they'll tell you. And I'm like, is this like a trick or something? You know, so I go, and thank goodness we're playing the Red Sox, and it's Manny at first base. And I go, Manny Ramirez is there. And I'm like, hey, and he's talking to me and just kind of meeting me for the first time. I'm just a brand new in the big leagues. And I asked him, I said, Manny, how do you slow the game down? You know? And he's like, hey, meet me tomorrow in the cage at 1:00. And I remember being like, man, is this another one of those tests? Like,
where's the key for home plate, right? That's what they're telling you.
I'm going to get sit down at AAA. Something's going to happen. Well, anyways, I don't say anything to anybody, and I just show up at the cage, and sure enough, it's Manny and some guy that's kind of like his hitting guy. And I just sit there and watch him for like 45 minutes going through his routine, and he's just like talking to me about it while he's doing it. And I'm just watching where he's hitting the ball, watching – you know, the effort of his swing, all these things, because that's kind of what I'm trying to learn is, like, you know, how do you become great? And then he says, come watch me in BP. And I remember I watched him in BP. And then he's like, and then he talked to me about all the work that he did, you know, before he even got in the cage. And I went into the video room and he had a sandwich. And that's whenever he would, you know, have his lunch, and he'd look at video and he would look at, you know, all this stuff that, like, people didn't really think about with Manny. Like, he was really smart about, you know, approach and hitting and how guys were trying to get him out. And so anyways, he comes up to me and he's like, yeah, listen, so tonight your starter is going to do this. You know, he's going to try to pitch to me this way. And he's like, you know, I never get good fastballs to hit. And I'll never forget these words of how he said, but he said, he always gives me a slider to hit. He's like, so I'm going to get it up and I won't miss it. I remember him saying that.
Wow.
You know, I remember going like, all right, am I supposed to tell the starter?
Yeah.
What am I supposed to do? But anyways, I don't say anything. I go to first base, you know, and sure enough, first AB, Manny's up there, and it's 2-2 count, and the pitcher did exactly what he said, you know, didn't really challenge him with the fastball, leaves the slider up. Manny hits it like 500 feet. He takes this big wide turn at first base, and he winks at me when he runs by, you know. And it was the best person for me to first talk to about hitting because, you know, I listened to how he thought. I listened to how he prepared. You know, I listened to kind of like just even just how he dealt with, you know, failure. So then it kind of gave me confidence, and I just started asking everybody that year. So I remember I got like Giambi at first base, and I asked him, and he's like, yeah, let's hit tomorrow, man. And he sits me in the cage and tells me everything he does. And I remember like David Ortiz spent some time with me. I mean, I had some like really, really great hitters that like basically just laid it out. Hey, this is what I do. This is how I think. And so that's what I did. And then I just started, you know, kind of looking around and learning from everybody I could. And, you know, I had Derek Shelton too. He was a great hitting coach for a few years. And yep. He showed me, you know, he helped a lot with approach and kind of being prepared. You know, he was really good at that side of it. And then, yeah, that was how I learned how to hit. And so, you know, when I'm talking, you know, to young guys, I talk to them about the stories of these great hitters and, you know, guys, you know, like Jim Thome, like gave me great advice. I remember I just got called up with Cleveland. I didn't know anybody, and we're at Fenway, and I'm a first baseman, and they got me in left field, and I'm just like freaking out, you know, because I'm like, man, everything's sped up on me. I don't have any of my equipment. I remember I'm using like Ellsberg's like bat and his shoes, and they're like way too big, and I was just super uncomfortable. But I remember Eddie Murray's like, after I just got done with early work and early hitting with, you know, Thome, and he's like sitting next to me on the bench. I remember Eddie's like, hey, we got to talk about who's pitching tonight. And I'm like, okay. And he goes, best fastball, best curveball, best slider, best changeup in the game. That's what he says. And I'm like looking out into left field, and I'm like thinking, who are we talking about? You know, he's talking about Pedro, right? Pedro Martinez. And so I'm like, all of a sudden, I'm just kind of like, oh, no, you know, have that moment. And then Thome like grabs my pants and like yanks on them. And I look down and he's like, hey, man, look for the heater. And I remember going like, oh, yeah, I can hit a heater. And so then that night, you know, I went in there just hunting the heater. Like I was looking for heater in, actually. And my second at bat, he threw one in there, and I got to it, and I hit a home run off of Pedro. And, you know, I run around the bases. It's my first home run. I'm like, I'm just like, oh, my gosh, this is crazy, you know. And then the next time I come up to face Pedro, he throws the first pitch at my head. And I have no idea that that's what he's going to do to me. So when I hit the deck, you know, my helmet's like 10 feet away from me, knocked the breath out of me. I'm seeing stars. I mean, it was a near-death experience. You know, you're getting up, and I remember Veritek's catching, and he's like staring at me. And I'm like, why is he looking at me like that? And then I look up, and Pedro's like sitting at the cut of the grass, like 10 feet away, just staring at me. And then Veritek throws him the ball, and he snacks the ball out of the air, and he spits on the ground and says something, you know, in Spanish at me, and walks back to the mound. And in that moment, I'm like, oh my God, he did that on purpose. You know, like he threw that at my head. And so the next three pitches, he threw curveballs like inside corner to me. And I like buckled, like it was a lefty, you know, like I thought it was going to hit me in the head. And he just yelled at me off the mound, you know. And I remember like going in, and Eddie's like, hey, did you learn something today? You know? And I'm like, yeah. And he's like, you take somebody deep like that, and they're going to let you know. And it was like, I don't know how long ago, it might've been like 6-7 home runs later. I'm facing the Yankees, and it's like first AB against Clemens, and he throws one that I can get to. And I mean, it's like mid swing. I know I'm going to hit it out. And all I'm thinking about, like right before contact, is like, how am I going to get out of the way of this guy's fastball? You know, it's like back then, like 2002, you didn't really want to hit a homer off of a veteran if you were a rookie, you know, because it was just like, it was very like bully style. You know, guys would like throw in and up, and they would hit you and not feel bad about it. And you just had to get used to it. And so sure enough, I hit the homer off of Roger, and I'm like, come up the next at bat, and he throws it right at my head. I mean, first pitch, and I got out of the way, and him and the umpire getting a huge argument. And I remember the umpire calls him Rocket in the middle of the argument. And I'm sitting there going like, man, the umpire's even calling him Rocket, you know, like, cause I'm a huge fan, you know, when you first get called up and you're a young player, you know, you're just like fans of all these people you're playing against, and you've got to kind of figure out how to flip the switch and then be like, no, I belong here, you know? And I think once you get to that moment where you really see it like that, that's when guys really, I think, take that next step.
Oh man, Ben, unbelievable. That's awesome. Those stories are unbelievable. Thank you. Let's have you back on real soon. Thank you. Thank you. Yeah.
Talk to you later, man.
Thanks, right. Ben.
Wow.
Ben.
Wow.
Spectrum Business keeps real businesses, like Rise Bakery, connected.
As a business owner, my Spectrum services help simplify my day. Everything we do is easier knowing that we've got a reliable connection. And it helps our business just run really smoothly. Even though our techniques are very ancient, we rely just as heavily on technology. Spectrum allows my business to go from surviving to thriving.
Keep your business running smoothly with Spectrum Internet, starting at $40 a month. Restrictions apply. Services not available in all areas.
Wow. I mean, we just talked to Ben Broussard. Well, I like, he started that the story he started, I just basically was just going to say to him, you know, because he was talking about teaching, and Eddie Murray was the
hitting
Indians
coach.
Was the Indians hitting coach for almost the entire time he was here. And I always thought it was hard sometimes with Eddie and some of the players, because Eddie was such a great hitter. And I think we all kind of know that sometimes when you see players that were great, it's hard sometimes to be able to translate the way they played into somebody else. And a lot of times, and I don't think Eddie was this guy, but a lot of times you see frustration if they can't get on the same communication level, because the level of expectation is so much different. And for the guys who are the great, the Hall of Famers, a lot of times just things come naturally to them. And when they're working with younger players, it's just not there yet. Especially when you're trying to go from college or high school to the pros or the minors, things get a lot different when you get to the show. It does. And it has really, a lot of times it has nothing to do with baseball. It's the simple things. It's the how you dress, how you get from point A to point B, when you do this, when you don't do that, because there's just this, it's a cultural thing. And so when he said that Eddie told him to start talking to guys at first base about maybe getting better, because Eddie, he said, I couldn't believe it. Eddie said to him, you have the opportunity of a lifetime because you play the best position to learn the most about the game by standing at first base when guys end up standing there. And then for him to come back and say, well, you know.
And if they're on base, they're happy
because
they got on base.
That's a great point, too. And so he just started talking to Manny after Manny had left Cleveland. And if you think about it, kind of maybe created some kind of an opening for him to become a big league player with the Indians, that, you know, he just said to him, hey, and then Manny said to him, well, just meet me in the cage tomorrow, when he was playing for the Red Sox. And I'm like, what?
Pretty cool.
Yeah. But, and so in part of that, as he's telling the story, I'm thinking to myself, maybe that's Manny's way of trying to pay it forward after coming up through the system here. And maybe somebody else told him the same thing. And so then they started talking, but then when he came back and said, what, Giambi did the same thing for him.
David Ortiz
did the same thing for him. Like, what? Are you serious? And so, and it, for him, it just started as, you know, just a simple question. Like, how do you make the game slow down? It's fast, man. Stand there once. If you ever can, if you ever can go to a batting cage and they can crank it up. And not that most batting cages can hit 100, because that, I mean, I'm sure the insurance would be through the roof for those. For those places, but you know, I remember Spire had one. I think I've told the story before, but Spire had a machine that could throw over 100. And I just remember sitting there and just standing in the box. I didn't have a bat in my hand. I just wanted to know what it was like to stand in the batter's box.
Did you see it?
No, you don't see it at all. I just remember the arm flinging back on the machine, and all of a sudden the ball was. I was watching, and then I was like, oh my God, this thing could kill me.
There are a couple things that every baseball fan needs to do, and one of them is, whether it's a major league game or a minor league game, get as close as you possibly can to home plate for a game and just sit there. Like, sit in the first row behind home plate or the first row behind first base and just watch how fast the ball moves. The second thing they should do is go to the Louisville Slugger Museum at some point.
Yeah.
And the reason is, they have that set up where it's a batting cage, and you face Cole Hamels, and he throws a 95-mile-an-hour fastball, and you stand right there at the cage and watch how fast 95 comes at you.
Right?
It's one of those holy blank moments as a baseball fan.
I cannot imagine standing in the box against Class A. He hit 101, didn't he? I watched him at 101.
I can't imagine that either.
And you just sit there, and it's just...
The minute TV
does not do it justice. It's not real on TV. It just isn't.
And the minute the ball comes at you, and then you know it's going to move, but you see it coming at you. I can't even imagine. You know what I mean?
You blink and it's past you.
Yeah.
I mean, in a blink.
And I don't mean at you like, you know, like here comes the pitch. I mean, it's coming at you.
Yeah.
Before it cuts, before it moves. I would just think, oh my God.
And that's even before
life's over.
The conversation we had yesterday with Slade Ciccone about tunneling pitches. Now imagine 95 miles an hour coming at you and then a slider coming from the same arm angle on the same plane. And all of a sudden that thing just breaks down. And you're like, well, now I'm done. Now I'm going to be sitting down.
I wondered what he did after he hit that home run. Remember, Tommy told, like, I thought that was great too, that he, you know, he talked about that first home run.
Look fastball.
And then
look for the fastball.
And boom. I don't know. I wonder if he, like, did he wave his arm up in the air or something while he was running around the bases?
You could be sure he didn't.
I want to go back and now watch his first home run if I can go find it. But it's just like, wow. I just thought that was really like the inside stuff on that. And then it kind of takes me back to yesterday's game where, you know, Vlad Guerrero gets hit twice in the series. There's no way, well, in game two, the Guardians were in a position to want to throw at him. But Vlad likes to crowd the plate a little bit. And then, you know, he gets hit again yesterday and has a tantrum. He got hit. I think he got hit on his elbow pad.
Forearm. Yeah,
it would look like it kind of hit his elbow pad. And then I was like, all right, I get it. And so then they knew that Jose Ramirez was probably going to get hit, and he did. And then you got people yelling and screaming. And, you know, I watched the Blue Jays postgame show, and they were saying, this is the right way to do it. And then the color analyst on their show was crushing Stephen Vogt over the fact that he came out and he pointed to his hip or his thigh or his behind to say that's where he should have thrown it. And the guy was like, Vogt has no right to argue where their best player is going to get hit. Ours didn't have a choice. And I'm like, first of all, you're in Toronto, and I'm watching a guy wear an elbow pad that like parents would be embarrassed to put on a squirt or a peewee in where hockey rules. Because they'd be like, oh, well, we've got to protect our kids. We got to put this. I mean, the elbow guard he wears is very big. And it's like, I go back to the first time he got plunked because the Guardians weren't really in a position to want to hit him at that point.
One thing, though, if you look at the replay where Jose was hit.
Yeah.
And Stephen Vogt said, you know, you should hit him in the hip or
at
whatever.
At least that's what it looked like, he said, right?
No, he said it in the postgame.
Oh, he said it postgame too?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
That pitch looked to me like it was going right above Jose's hip. And Jose moved his arm in front of the pitch.
Oh.
In reaction to try and get out of the way. At least it looked that way to me. I looked at it four or five times.
Does it go back to the unwritten rules? 216-474-0092. Baskin and Phelps, 92.3 The Fan.
Spectrum Business keeps real businesses, like Rise Bakery, connected.
As a business owner, my Spectrum services help simplify my day. Everything we do is easier knowing that we've got a reliable connection. And it helps our business just run really smoothly. Even though our techniques are very ancient, we rely just as heavily on technology. Spectrum allows my business to go from surviving to thriving.
Keep your business running smoothly with Spectrum Internet, starting at $40 a month. Restrictions apply. Services not available in all areas.